The justice system in the United States, through its courts, handles tens of thousands of criminal cases each year. A large number of these cases involve individuals who cannot afford a lawyer to represent them, and must therefore rely on the services of a group of attorneys whose salaries are paid by the court. These attorneys are called public defenders. Hi, I'm Anna McHugh, a senior at Nevada Union High School in Grass Valley, California. When I was considering a suitable subject for my senior project, I had the good fortune to talk to Ann Moore, an experienced attorney with the Nevada County Public Defender's Office. What I soon realized from our conversation was how little I knew about the work of public defenders. Like many Americans, my ideas had been shaped by movies or television shows, like Law and Order. As portrayed on these fictional dramas, the public defender is a jaded, overworked, and often incompetent lawyer who couldn't cut it in private practice, who spends his or her days in bleak interrogation rooms, or before cynical judges, representing the worst segments of society, the drug pushers, prostitutes, gangbangers, and others of the criminal class. This may make for compelling entertainment, but does it reflect the actual life of the public defender? Nevada County, where I live, is a far cry from the gritty streets of the inner city. Located in the foothills of the Sierra Mountains, northeast of Sacramento, it is a rural community of 87,000 people. Serious crimes, such as murder and armed robbery, are more the exception than the rule. So, I decided, for my senior project, to explore what role the public defenders play in my own community. Do they make a difference in the lives of those whom they defend? To begin, I decided to learn as much as I could about the history of public defense and how it came to be an essential component of our modern system of justice. To do this, I first talked to Dr. Michael Landon, professor of English legal history at the University of Mississippi.
Historically, in English law, it was not considered that the defendant in a criminal case was in need of legal defense. The idea was that it was simply a question of fact. Did they or did they not commit the crime? And roughly speaking, they would sort of make their defense before the jury, and the jury made up probably of people who knew them would decide whether they were guilty or innocent. It was, if an issue of law came up during a criminal trial, then the accused could ask the court for, ask the judge for permission to bring in legal counsel to argue the legal point. But as far as the actual guilt or innocence went, there was regarded as no right to legal representation. The first change in that came in the year 1696 in England. 7 years earlier, in 1689, King James II, because he was a Roman Catholic, had been forced off the English throne and was in exile in France. A lot of people in England sort of kept behind the scenes in touch with James II, just in case he did get restored. They'd send him a card at Christmas time saying, "Wish you were here," or something. And anyway, in 1696, a big plot was uncovered against King William and in favor of King James. And a lot of people, including some people in both houses of Parliament, the House of Commons and the House of Lords, felt that they might possibly be charged with regard to it. And that's generally considered the reason why, in that year, 1696, they passed the Trial for Treasons Act, which, among other things, said that anyone charged with treason was entitled to be represented by a legal counsel, by a barrister. But that only applied to treason trials. However, during the next 100 years, gradually the judges allowed legal representation in other kinds of criminal cases until by the early 1800s it was regarded as, for all practical purposes, a right that the accused was entitled to. Of course, there was the question of who's going to pay, and a lot of people simply didn't have legal representation because they couldn't afford a lawyer. So usually, if it was a small community, you know, your employer might pay for your cousins or somebody might pay for your defense if you couldn't. But obviously, and particularly as life became more complicated and communities became larger in modern times, it became more and more of a problem. In 1963, you have Gideon versus Wainwright, in which the Supreme Court of the United States said that the accused was entitled to legal representation in a criminal trial, and if he couldn't afford it, then the court had to provide it.
Clarence Earl Gideon was a 51-year-old drifter who was arrested in Panama City, Florida, in 1961, on the charge of breaking into a pool hall and stealing some wine and beer and the change from a vending machine. Unable to afford a lawyer, Gideon was forced to defend himself at his trial. Convicted, he was sentenced to 5 years in the state penitentiary. As played by Henry Fonda in the 1979 movie Gideon's Trumpet, Gideon is approached by another convict soon after his arrival at prison.
Hey, old Charlie down at the library tells me you're trying to get your conviction overturned. Because they didn't give you no lawyer? You really think there's anything to that?
No state shall deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. That's the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America. I asked them for a lawyer, they wouldn't give me one. Means I was deprived of my liberty without due process of law.
Would that be true for me, too? Because I didn't have no lawyer either. I got screwed the same as you did. What do they have to do if you win? What do they have to do? Let you out?
Abby, I got more reading to do there.
Even if you did it?
I didn't.
Oh, but even if you did it?
I was still entitled to a lawyer. They can't put you in jail without they give you a fair trial.
God Almighty.
Gideon's conviction was in no way unusual for the times. Many were tried and convicted without a lawyer to defend them. Under the 1942 Supreme Court ruling Betts v. Brady, the court had ruled that the states were obligated to provide legal counsel only in capital cases, or those involving special circumstances, such as when the defendant was illiterate or mentally retarded. Sending the Supreme Court a pencil-written petition from his jail cell in Florida, Gideon put in motion a set of circumstances that was to have a profound impact on the legal system throughout the country. Once the court agreed to hear his case, they assigned Abe Fortas, a prominent trial attorney, to represent him. In his summation before the High Court, as played by the actor Jose Ferrer, Fortas successfully argued the core issue of whether legal representation was merely a privilege granted by the states, or a right guaranteed under the Constitution of the United States.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. I believe this case dramatically illustrates that you cannot have a fair trial without counsel. Under our adversary system of justice, how can our civilized nation pretend that there is a fair trial without the counsel for the prosecution doing all he can within the limits of decency and the counsel for the defense doing his best within the same limits? And from this clash, the truth will emerge. I think there is a tendency to forget what happens to these poor, miserable, indigent people in these strange and awesome surroundings. Sometimes in this court, there is a tendency to forget what happens downstairs. I was reminded the other night as I pondered this case of Clarence Darrow when he was prosecuted for trying to fix a jury. The first thing he realized was that he needed a lawyer. He, one of this country's great criminal lawyers.
Mr. Fortas, what are the limits of what you're asking? Now, at what stage of a criminal case must a lawyer be supplied? And in what kinds of cases?
Do we have to pass on that?
No, sir, not at this time, but I will give my opinion anyway. A lawyer should be provided at least from the first arraignment of the prisoner through his trial and appeal. And this right should apply in all but petty offenses.
What about traffic violations?
Even for traffic offenders. I know that sounds strange, but it would work. Only an occasional oddball would ask, and it would be very easy to say to him, "Yes, sir, go right down the hall to that door. That's the public defender's office. They'll see you." Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
The week before Christmas, I spent several days at the Nevada County Courthouse, talking with Ann Moore about her work as a public defender and observing her in action. Ann shared with me why she decided to leave her first career as a schoolteacher to become a public defense lawyer.
I was working in the Tenderloin and as a political activist, and I was organizing tenants around housing issues. And I went before the San Francisco Rent Board as just an advocate. I was a teacher at the time for a group of tenants in a Tenderloin hotel. And we won the hearing, and these people, because of my efforts, these people were able to get back rent, were able to get more heat in their individual hotel rooms, and it was just so personally rewarding and empowering that I knew that I needed to do that more on a full-time basis. And you need the degree, you need the credentials, so I felt that I needed to be a lawyer and not just a teacher who does this part-time in my spare time.
Before a case goes to trial, Ann meets with an assistant district attorney, such as Jim Phillips, to see if the charge against her client can be dismissed. If not, she tries to negotiate a plea bargain, an agreed-upon punishment for her client. If a plea bargain cannot be reached, the case goes to trial.
All right, next.
Okay, go ahead.
This guy is stopped at...
He rolls over his car.
Right, it's a solo accident at 1 o'clock, 1:10 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cops arrive, he goes to the hospital. At Sierra Nevada Hospital at 2:08, they do a little handheld pass test, and his blood alcohol is 0.094. Then they draw blood at 2:25. The blood alcohol is 0.12.
The problem is the pass devices won't come in our county courts.
Yeah, but you can look at this and know that he has a rising blood alcohol.
Well, you know why they don't come in our courts?
Because they're so unreliable.
Your office has convinced our judges that they're not accurate enough. Yet the blood test is actually from a blood draw and gas chromatograph, and they're dead-on accurate.
He's got an injury to his forehead, a contusion, according to the police report.
So.
And other injuries.
His car's found on its roof in a solo accident, and you want us to believe that that accident has nothing to do with him being 1.5 times the legal limit to drive 1.5 hours after the accident.
I would guess that at the time of the accident, he was well under the legal limit.
I think
probably about an 06.
Set it for trial.
Exactly what I thought you would say. But short of that, what's the offer to him?
This count is one, worth 5 days.
This what?
5 days. Set it for trial.
Jim, this is a wet. I'm writing wet.
5 days. Set it for trial.
I can't believe this.
He's a 0.12, a solo rollover accident.
He has a defense, unlike, 90%. And I'm sure
that's
why
a 0.12.
Dick thought it should... All right.
set it for trial. All right, what's next?
Okay, so here's a drunk in public. This guy was released from prison and 4 hours later was picked up by the Grass Valley Police Department.
In many ways, Anne sees her job as telling another person's story, helping the court see her client, first and foremost, as a human being.
What I do as a public defender is I take a look at an individual's case, and I look for a factual defense. I look for any legal defense. And in so many cases, when I have no factual defense, I don't have a legal defense, then what I do is I get to know my client, or I try to. I make an effort to get to know my client to find out what led that person to do what they did on that particular day in their lives. You know, I look at their, I try to get an idea of their background, get a feel for what's going on in their lives. And what I find is that these people are generally in some sort of personal crisis. And it may be short-lived or it may be lifelong. I find that they're in the midst of a divorce. They've just lost their job. They can't support their family. They've been evicted for the third time in 2 years. I find that maybe in addition to all of that or some of that, they have a substance abuse problem. And I would say that generally my clients, probably over half of them have either an alcohol or a drug addiction or a problem with it. So I get to know those things about them, and I find out these things. I find out that this woman is supporting these two kids, and she works at the mini mart, and she doesn't have daycare, and she's juggling all these problems, and her mother has cancer and is going through chemotherapy. So I find out all of that, and then my job is to present that information to the district attorney and say, hey, take a look at this person for who they are. Take a look at the whole person. Look at this background. Have an understanding for that. Maybe there's a mental illness involved. And then let's talk about what really happened here. It isn't just that on that particular day, you know, she walked out of the store with that box of cigarettes. That isn't all that this case is about. This case is about this person and her life or his life and what led her to that particular event on that particular day.
Ms. Wilkins?
Ms. Wilkins? Good afternoon, Ms. Wilkins.
Hello.
Okay. This is on today for pretrial.
I'm asking the court to consider under 1385 of the Penal Code a motion to dismiss this case. Ms. Wilkins is charged with driving a suspended license with one prior conviction for that. And I have a plea bargain offer which will allow her to plead to a 12500 as a misdemeanor. However, after I spoke with her today, I realized that I would like to talk to the DA about it, but I thought perhaps the court might consider just dismissing this case outright. She was stopped by the Grass Valley Police Department, and the reason for the stop was that she was apparently following too closely behind another vehicle, and then they determined that her license was suspended. In the car at the time was her mother, who is presently in court. Her mother is in a wheelchair and is disabled and cannot walk. Ms. Wilkins herself has Graves' disease. She explained this to the officers. They were both put out on the street with a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old to find their way home, and the car was impounded. So I feel that that is enough punishment for the crime of driving without the license. And indeed, her license is in suspension. Apparently, she's not eligible to receive a license until April of 99. So we're not even in a position where we can put this over long enough that she can clear up the license and just have an infraction charge.
And the offer from the people at this time is a $12,500 as a misdemeanor?
Misdemeanor, $270 fine with a restitution fund fine.
Mm-hmm.
But Ms. Wilkins, she's not able to work. Her mother, who is on Social Security disability, supports herself and her 4-year-old daughter.
And what was the purpose for driving on that date?
I was taking the kids and my mom and myself to meet with my daughter's school Head Start for the Halloween, the downtown Halloween trick-or-treat.
Mm-hmm. But this was not any emergency in the sense that there was a medical emergency or something of that nature that required you to drive?
No.
Mm-hmm.
The DA is offering her an informal diversionary period and will waive time for 6 months. At that time, she'll have her license, hopefully, and then they will dismiss the case.
All right.
That's great, John.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Phillips.
Thank you.
So, Ms. Wilkins, you understand what this means is that you have a right to have a speedy trial. That's your right to have a trial, to insist on it within 45 days to have this case determined one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Are you willing to give up that right?
Yes.
All right, because what you're being offered is then a period of 6 months in which to not have any further problems and to hopefully get your license. And that would be a condition of the DA diversion?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
Unlike attorneys in private practice, public defenders often find themselves handling large numbers of cases, which can seriously undermine the quality of defense they are able to provide for their individual clients. I asked Anne about this, and what impact she felt it had on the larger issue of legal and social justice in our society.
On an average per month, in terms of new cases, misdemeanor cases, I probably get between 60 and 100 new cases. What it means is that you're forced to spend very little time on each case. So you spend very little time with each client, which is very stressful on my clients. They have a very short interview with me. So previously, I was telling you how I really like to get to know my clients and get to know their story. It has to be the Reader's Digest version of their life, and I really don't get to know them. But it's very difficult on them, because they're confused. They don't know what's going on. They don't know what their rights are. They look to me. I'm all they have. I'm there to explain to them what's going on, what's going to happen to them, what their defenses are, what the potential consequences to any plea bargain are, what will happen if we choose to go to trial or if we don't choose to go to trial, and for them to consider everything else in their life, to balance the time they're going to spend in court and with me or with my investigator against what would happen to them if they didn't go to court and fight this. So it's very stressful. And, it's just the typical sort of love-hate job. You love the job and you just hate that you can't do a better job. You're pretty much forced into doing the job in a way that doesn't feel good to you. If I had more resources available, mainly time, but also, well, mainly time, because if I had the time, I probably could get proper investigation time too. But if I had those resources, then my clients definitely would get the best defense they can get in Nevada County from me. But I don't have that because of the demands of my job and the caseload. So what my clients get is what the court considers an adequate, constitutionally adequate defense. I often do not consider that it's constitutionally adequate at all. But this is a matter of politics, and a matter of state politics and county politics, personal politics, and the way, the County Board of Supervisors views the role of our office and the public policy behind why there should be a public defender office and why indigent people need a defense, and against the monies that they may spend on prosecuting cases. So I think it's a real shame that it is a political matter, but it's very political, whether or not my clients deserve better than just a sometimes substandard representation. So, you know, my clients, a lot of them don't vote. They certainly have very little political clout. They don't know how to organize. So, you know, they can't even organize their personal lives. So they can't go out and politically organize. And because they can't do that, they don't have political clout. They don't have that personal clout that they don't go to the, a lot of them don't go to the polls and vote. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And they don't go out and organize. And so because of that, they can be dismissed. But I think that's really the wrong way for any politician to look at the work that I do, because it speaks to what the system is doing. So I am viewed as part of the system initially by all of my clients. I am, you know, the reaction I get from many, many of my clients is, oh boy, I have a public defender. And that reaction comes from not just from misconception. It comes from knowing that if they have a public defender, that public defender is, number one, a county department, so it's part of the government, and number two, that person is going to be very stretched for time and probably won't return my calls, won't meet with me, will just doesn't care about me as an individual, and I'm just one of her many, many cases. And then, you know, they show up to court and they see that they are just one of my 35 cases for that day. It confirms everything they believe. So their contact with me tells them a lot, or reinforces what they may already feel about our system of government, especially the criminal justice system. And it's very important to me that I can tell them that, no, this is a fair system, that they are going to receive justice here, and I'm going to help them do that. And when I'm not able to do that, they walk away with the impression that they came in with, that they're not going to get a fair shake, that things, that they're, you know, that they're, they are not, their kids are not, and it breeds this sort of an underclass of people who are outside, who are outsiders. I'm not sure where that's going to lead us.
Throughout the weeks of researching and producing my senior project, I developed a deeper appreciation for the important role the public defender plays in our unique legal system in the United States. I also came to greatly respect Anne Moore, both as a highly competent attorney and a caring individual genuinely committed to her clients' welfare. One of Anne's clients, Leanne Sheffield, confirmed that I was not alone in this.
I can't afford to have a regular lawyer. I just couldn't, or I'd spend the rest of Christmas in jail. You know, so, because people who don't have money don't have a lawyer, period. Anne just cares about what she's doing. We've had other public defenders that just want to get through the case, want to get through the court and make the deal or do the deal and just get through it so they can get on to the next client. Anne doesn't do that. She spends time and talks with us and talks about, she even calls me at night and makes sure I'm okay and if I'm ready for court. She just really cares about what she's doing.
I wish to thank Anne Moore, Jim Phillips, Mike Ferguson, Judge Albert Dover, Judge Kathleen Butts, Bill Walker, Dr. Bill Durbro, Steve Baker, and the Raven Radio Theater of the Air for their generous help with this production.